You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a voicemail, a text message, anything you've got for us, any part of the discussion we were talking about earlier this week. We'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369 is the place to do it. Matt, we are back. We are going to get right to our interview with Stephen Note from The Athletic. It's been a while since we've had Stephen on the show, and I think he is by far one of the best at NBA content, at Bulls content, breaking down the X's and O's. So if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, you should do that right now. Follow him and Darnell Mayberry and all their Bulls coverage all season long. That's at The Athletic. You can download the app. It's your one-stop shop for the best sports writing out there, and you can get all types of coverage, national and local coverage. So without further ado, here's Stephen Note from The Athletic.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to the Locked On Bulls podcast a great basketball and Bulls writer for The Athletic Chicago. He is Stephen Note. You can follow him on Twitter at Steph Note to get all of his great content for The Athletic, which, by the way, if you aren't subscribed, you absolutely should be to get all of his great content, all of Darnell Mayberry's great content covering our Chicago Bulls. Stephen, welcome back to the pod, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me back here.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to chat with you. First up, you just wrote something about what Markkanen's return will do for this Bulls team offensively. And it sounds like that return of Lauri Markkanen is right around the corner now, maybe sometime next week. It's a great piece. What, in your opinion, is the biggest effect that Markkanen coming back will have? And is it somehow tied to Zach LaVine, who has been kind of struggling facing a lot of double teams recently?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's going to help everybody, not just LaVine, but I think LaVine is going to see the biggest impact. So the way that teams have been guarding the Bulls ever since the sixth game of the season when they played the Atlanta Hawks, the Hawks were double and triple teaming LaVine and getting away with it. The Bulls couldn't really punish them for doing that. So I think other teams kind of watched that game tape and took that plan into effect. And, you know, we all remember that LaVine started the season super hot. He had that string of 30 plus point games. And ever since then, he has not been the same player at all. His shooting percentages have taken a huge dip, still scoring okay, but he's taking so many shots to get there. So I think that Markkanen just having another threat out there that can spread the floor. Markkanen sets the pick for LaVine and LaVine draws two. All Markkanen needs to do is pop out to the three-point line, and he has such a quick release on his shot that he's just going to punish teams. They're not going to be able to do that anymore. So I'm really excited to see that happen. And yeah, I think that those two are just going to help each other out so much once Markkanen gets back on the floor.
Staying with LaVine really fast. So Monday night, obviously, looking at that Spurs-Bulls game, comes down to the last play, and Zach LaVine calls off Red Hoiberg, basically calls off the whole team, wants to go isolation, and then settles for a step-back three at the end, which he obviously missed. The Bulls end up losing that game. What are your thoughts on that shot, that last shot? Like, I was telling Matt and our listeners that, to me, if you're Zach LaVine and you're a guy that is trying to emphasize learning how to win, and that's kind of been his main quote this season so far, is we've got to learn how to win as a team. Taking a step back three when you're shooting 22.7% in the month of November from the three isn't exactly, to me, learning how to win. So what did you think about that shot at the end, and what should he have done instead of taking that step back three?
I mean, it was a terrible shot. Like, after he, as soon as he let go of that ball, Stacey King was repeating over and over, you know, that's a bad shot, that's a bad shot. And Stacey doesn't go out of his way to criticize guys unless it's really warranted. I mean, they were down by 1 point. You don't need a three there. You just need any sort of high percentage shot. Like a step back long two in that situation is still a better shot than a step back three, because, I mean, you're going to make that a little bit more often. And as far as him waving off Carter, I mean, I didn't like that, because the reason he did that was because he didn't want to have to pass the ball off, right? He didn't want to draw a double, and you know, he didn't trust his teammates at that point. Now, when he does wave off Carter, I think it's not the worst thing in the world, because he had DeMar DeRozan on him out on the 3-point line, and DeRozan is a really bad defender. This is the reason why I have such an issue with that 3-pointer. Like, LaVine is so much faster than DeRozan. DeRozan is not good on the perimeter. He's like a very, very overrated defender. And LaVine could have blown by him so easily if he wanted to. Just to take like a fadeaway 3-pointer in that situation, it was just like such bad basketball IQ. And then to hear his comments afterwards, where he was not apologetic about that shot, where he said like he's made that before and he's fine with that shot, that was actually like way more concerning to me. So he can take the last shot in that situation totally fine. You know, he's by far the best offensive creator, but he should not have taken a fadeaway contested three. I don't think anybody would argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that LaVine didn't do the best he could, and maybe, you know, made a bad decision down the stretch there in what was a winnable game. To me, Steph, the other part of that fourth quarter that really decided the outcome of that game and put the Bulls in the position where they were down and needed LaVine to be a hero, is that right around the 3-minute mark, Wendell Carter Jr. picked up his fifth foul, and Fred immediately subbed him out and put Rolo back in there. And in that 1-minute span, from 3 minutes left in the fourth to 2 minutes left in the fourth, the Spurs went on a little mini run where the Bulls went from being like down one or two to down seven. And there were two instances where Rolo just got completely blown past, including an and one dunk for Aldridge that was just so easy. And yes, like Wendell had a couple of bad plays on the other end. He missed like a layup. He had a turnover at some point. But to me, like, that was just Fred being just like a robot coach. Like, oh, Wendell picked up his fifth, better take him out. It's like, to me, I was like, if there's only 3 minutes left, what's the point of taking a guy out with five fouls? If he fouls out, he fouls out. And Wendell is clearly a better rim protector and a better lateral defender than Robin Lopez. What was your take on Fred's decision there? Do you think he should have left Wendell in the game?
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what play you're talking about, where Aldridge did a little eyebrow fake and just ran straight past Robin Lopez for the and one. And yeah, I was pretty upset in game that Carter wasn't in there. I mean, even if you think that Lopez is better in that matchup, I mean, the point of the season is to develop Carter. He needs to play in those closing minutes. And Fred has done that a lot, where he's taken Carter out. And I don't understand it, especially for these defense-only plays. Like, there was a game a couple weeks ago where he put in Parker, and Parker actually had like the game ceiling block. I mean, like, being results oriented, yes, that was a good decision, but still, in a vacuum, like, you always want to have Carter out there. He's by far the Bulls' best big man defender. So the thing I did like was that Fred very quickly realized that Lopez should not be out there. So, yeah, I think he said it was only for like a minute or two, and then he put Carter back in. So I think that, you know, Fred is learning that he really does need to stick with Carter there. And he's raved about his defense, too, whenever I've talked to him about it. So I really don't – I would like to know why he keeps on pulling Carter for these closing minutes, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Ever since Jordan and I started this podcast, people have been asking us for betting advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. Should I take the Bulls to cover? Should I take the Bulls against the spread? The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on, it's just as important to know who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great online reviews, and their mobile site is so easy to use. You can lay down some cash and win big today. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. It's really that easy. They have in-game betting, live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy players out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. Heck, maybe you want to put some money on this Bulls-Bucks game we got tonight. The Bulls are plus 14. Maybe you think that they can cover that. Just join now. MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid.
Steph, staying with Carter really quick. We asked four people last week between Casey Johnson and your colleague Darnell Mayberry, and Ricky O'Donnell and Sean Hyken. I've asked this question to those four people, and I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, listening to Wendell Carter Jr. talk in the locker room, and especially after those losses last week and even the week before that, he had made comments about how we're missing a voice, we're missing that one leader to kind of rally all of us together, and at times it gets frustrating. To me, I feel like this Bulls team should be embracing Carter, and maybe they are, and I just don't see that as a fan right this second. But as far as Carter speaking up to the level of leadership and a voice for a 19-year-old rookie in this league, how do you think that Bulls team is taking that? Are they embracing him as maybe a potential leader? And who is the main guy that they're missing, that they're, that voice would be there? Normally, is it Dunn? Is it Portis? Is it Markkanen? Is it Valentine? Or do they just not have that guy, and that's going to be part of this season, is figuring out who that guy is?
Well, Robin Lopez is the oldest guy on the team. He's 30 years old. The guys respect the hell out of him, but the thing about him is he's kind of like a quiet guy, actually, in the locker room. And I've asked him about this before, like if he goes up to the players and offers them advice, or if he kind of waits for them to approach him. And he said it occurs kind of more naturally, and he doesn't really go out of his way to like be overbearing on the players, although he, you know, he does help them a lot when they approach him. So I think there is this veteran leader that's missing from this team. I mean, the most tenured Bull on this team is Bobby Portis, and he's 23 years old, and the guys do look to him as one of the biggest leaders, but he just doesn't have the experience. And Denzel Valentine is another guy that has a big voice in that locker room that they really respect. But again, like, he's out for the season. He is in his, I think he's in his fourth year, right? So he's still like a very young player too. So I think Carter is absolutely right in that, you know, they could really use some more veterans on this team. I didn't like the decisions that the Bulls made in free agency the past couple of seasons. I thought that they should have gotten a veteran guy, especially at the point guard position, that is really difficult to learn. And you're seeing that these point guards on the Bulls have just been killing them night after night. So yeah, I think Carter's absolutely justified in his comments. And another thing that I really did like too is the reporters, the beat guys, asked LaVine what they thought of Carter's comments, and LaVine had Carter's back. He said, this is a young guy. He's going to be on the team for many years. He's going to be a big piece of the core. So yeah, he should have a voice. So I think everybody just realizes that, yeah, this team, they're frustrated on a night-to-night basis that they're not playing better. They don't exactly know how to win yet, and they really could use another big voice in this locker room.
I want to piggyback off that really quick, because you had mentioned the oldest guys in the locker room, which traditionally in an NBA locker room or any professional sports locker room, it's usually the veterans who are the guys that are going to speak up or feel like they can take guys underneath their wing. But in the same sense, the Bulls are the second youngest team in the NBA right now. And I was telling Matt this when we brought it up originally a few weeks ago, that you've got four guys in this team that are in their fifth year or later of experience. Everybody else has less than that. And three of the four of those guys aren't even going to probably be on this roster next year, including Holiday, Lopez, and Parker. So that leaves you just with LaVine. So to me, are you saying that maybe in an NBA locker room, it is more traditional for a veteran to step up, and it would be kind of weird for a rookie or a guy that's maybe two or three years in the league to be that main voice, and maybe they do need to find a veteran guy that can kind of hold things down, or are they just going to have to figure it out between those young guys? And is that possible for a young team to grasp onto a young leader?
I mean, yeah, they're already asking Carter to do way too much for this team, and he was one of the youngest guys in this rookie class. So there's no way you can, I mean, if I don't know how old you guys are. I'm 34. If I had some 19-year-old kid bossing me around, like, there's no way I would listen or respect that at all. So they do need some older voices. Quincy Pondexter was actually that guy for the team last year. Markkanen said that Pondexter was one of his biggest mentors, and, you know, they traded him to save some money or whatever, like in the middle of the year. So, yeah, I think they should look to just get somebody on the minimum to help teach these guys how to win.
We're talking with Stefan Noe, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago. Follow him on Twitter at Steph Noe. You mentioned that you weren't a big fan of the Bulls' recent free agency moves, and I would have to agree with you. Everyone who listens to Locked On Bulls knows that I was not a fan of the Jabari signing from the get-go. And I know I saw you had a fun interaction on Twitter recently with our pal C Red Fred, because people are starting to talk about how Jabari has looked better in this recent stretch of games where he's scoring 20 plus points. He's, you know, put together a couple of double doubles. He had that one near triple double game, you know, about a week ago. And so I'm saying, well, hey, you know, it looks like every once in a while he's trying, at least on the defensive end. You mentioned the game where he had that game winning block, which was just so many kinds of hilarious to me. But in your eyes, it sounds like it's still just a giant vacuum of awfulness for Jabari on the defensive end, and he's still a net negative for this team. Is that how you would analyze it, even though he has started to look a little more efficient on the offensive end?
I don't know if I would call him a net negative. He's definitely not a huge positive or anything, and his defense is still very bad, but he's been good offensively in the last four games. I think he's shooting like 53% over that span, averaging like over 20 points. I think it's 22 points. So when he provides that much value on offense, I think he is probably like a slight positive, but yeah, the problems on defense are very real. I get a lot of, you know, I tweet out these videos of Jabari where it's just unbelievable how bad he is on some of these plays. And I get people tweeting back at me like, why are you always picking on this guy? Why do you always nitpick every single tiny mistake he makes? And the truth is, I don't come anywhere near nitpicking his mistakes. Like, when I'm watching these games, there are every single game, there's like seven or eight plays that just stand out to me that I'm like, I cannot believe I'm watching an NBA player do this. And I just don't tweet them out because I don't want to totally beat the guy up when everybody knows that he can't play any defense. But I mean, he truly is like one of the worst defenders at his position in the NBA.
Speaking of one of the worst defenders in the NBA, going to his pal Antonio Blakeney, who also listed in RPM, you know, the rankings had been updated this week, and Antonio Blakeney is in the bottom three out of 434 players listed. When that first came out, Jabari Parker was the worst in total RPM. Just curious, the point guard situation, you know, talked about the defense, and that's going to be a main issue for this Bulls team all season long. But I'm more curious about the point guard situation than anything else right now. Ryan Arcidiacono, Shaq Harrison, Cameron Payne, what's going on with this rotation? And are you surprised by Ryan Arcidiacono and how well he's played? Like, I know as a casual fan or somebody who follows this team every single day, even those people, the diehard fans, have to be at least a little bit surprised at, you know, talking about Ryan Arcidiacono, a guy that made the 15th spot on this roster, and then going all the way to being promoted to a starter and playing really well in that role. What have you seen from Archie Diacono and maybe some of the other point guards too, and seeing how that situation will unfold once Chris Dunn comes back? What do you think things will look like?
I mean, Archie Diacono has been awesome for the Bulls. I watched him in his first summer league appearance last year, and I didn't even think that like he was going to get a spot on a European team. He was just like kind of another guy out there. And you know, when you're not dominating summer league, you usually don't have very good career prospects. But credit to him, he has become a much better shooter. He's shooting 44% from three this year. And anytime you shoot that high of a percentage, you're going to have a spot in this league. But more than just shooting the ball, his hustle has been crazy. And this is a team where they have looked really lethargic at times. When Archie Diacono is diving on the floor, he's got to lead the league in like amount of time spent on the ground just diving for loose balls. So I think that kind of stuff is contagious. And the Bulls, a lot of their problems, especially on the defensive end of the court, have to do with that running back in transition, matching up and fighting for rebounds, things like that. That's all stuff that Arch does. I think it's contagious. So I've been really pleased with his performance over these past couple of games.
Steph, a guy that has been gaining a lot of traction among, you know, Bulls Reddit and Bulls fans on Twitter for his positive play, one of the rare positives this season, is Justin Holiday, one of these veterans that we've talked about on a very young team. I mean, he's having really, if you look at his numbers, like a career year with his three-point efficiency, his scoring. He's not a great defender, but he's certainly not as bad as a lot of the other people on this Bulls roster right now. I'd say he's about average on the defensive end, and his length, you know, provides some opportunities for some steals and some easy fast break buckets. People, of course, are asking about his trade value right now. I thought coming into the season it was minimal, if not zero. But with the way that he's been pouring in threes at that very valuable wing position in the NBA, you got to assume that there might be at least a few teams out there that are interested. Like, we've heard that the Sixers are looking to add more shooting, and they're talking to the Cavs about Kyle Korver, who, you know, probably more valuable than Justin Holiday at this point. But what do you see as Holiday's trade value? Do you think they could get a second-round pick for him? I know that this team is not really in love with using second-round picks. What do you see Holiday's trade value being currently?
Well, they tried to trade him at last year's deadline. Couldn't really find any takers. But I do agree with you. I think that he does have some trade value. I think they could definitely get a second-round pick if that's what they want. I mean, he's 29 years old. He does not fit with this team at all. He's an expiring contract, only making $4.5 million. So he can fit into another team very easily. So, you know, if I found out tomorrow that Justin Holiday was traded, I would not be surprised in the very least. I think the Bulls should be shopping him very aggressively. And as you said before, he can help a lot of contending teams. So, yeah, it doesn't really make sense that he is still on the Bulls.
Looking at somebody else too, how about Robin Lopez or anybody else on this roster, as you look at it currently constructed, if we're talking about looking at the trade deadline a few months down the road, anybody else besides Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday that the Bulls might flirt with, the entertaining deals for? I know before Denzel Valentine's injury, that could have been a potential option. If Bobby Portis comes back and plays well, do the Bulls still see a future for him here, or do you think that might be a guy they might entertain an offer if they get something that is too good to pass up on? Anybody else on this roster that you could see being shopped, or is it, and there's nothing really here of value for playoff contending teams?
I think Portis is their biggest trade chip. I'm actually surprised that not more discussion is centered around him, because he is going to be a restricted free agent. He's a pretty good young player. He doesn't really fit into their plans at all. I mean, there's no way that he's going to eclipse Larry Markkanen or Wendell Carter in the starting lineup. So you're going to have to pay him a lot of money to be a bench big man. They already have that. They already made that mistake with Cristiano Felicio. I mean, I think Portis is going to be a lot better than Felicio, but still, like, I think that Portis could start for another team. So does make sense to trade him, preferably for a wing where they don't really have anything right now. So, yeah, I would not be surprised either if they move Portis before the deadline. And as far as Robin Lopez, I don't really think he has any trade value aside from if they want to take in like one of these big, bad contracts, he could be matching salary. But I really just the way that the league is trending, I don't think that he could really help a playoff team that much.
Going back to Bobby really quick, Steph, and this Bulls front court situation, I'm with you in the fact that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Bulls to break the bank for a bench player like Bobby. And given the fact that you have Markkanen and Wendell, your starting front court for the future appears to be set. At the same time, we talked about Jabari Parker a little earlier and the fact that he's started to look a little bit more efficient, on at least on the offensive end. But it seems like Parker, we've already figured out, is not a great fit for this young core. And he certainly can't play the three in the way that Gar and Pax try to advertise this to the, you know, the fan base on Jabari Parker's introductory press conference day, saying he's a natural fit, whatever. We just are looking to add young talent. When Bobby and Markkanen are both healthy and back in this rotation, it seems like the consensus is Markkanen will be your starting four, Wendell your starting five. Jabari will go back to playing a reserve role, playing the four off the bench, and they probably will shift Bobby to the five coming off the bench, thus essentially negating any minutes for Rolo and Felicio. To me, that makes sense, but we saw some glimpses of Jabari and Parker, Jabari and Portis playing the front court together in the preseason, and defensively, that was a nightmare. What do you think Fred should do about that front court situation and rotation when Markkanen and Portis are both healthy?
Well, he should just try all of them. I mean, he should try all the different combinations. This gear is, it's just strictly for evaluation purposes. So, I don't think he should limit Portis to only playing backup power forward. If he wants to try him at center, that's fine. If he wants to try Portis Parker, I mean, it's probably not going to work, but, you know, why not?
Going towards maybe an overarching theme of this rebuild in its entirety, Stefan, I know you haven't been the biggest advocate for some of the guys that they let go, one being this summer in David Nwaba. I'm curious, as a Bulls fan who's listening to this right now, if you had to sit here and evaluate what Fred Hoiberg, Gar Pax have done over the last, I don't know, 2 years or so, with their evaluation of some of the talent that they've let go, some of the guys that they've traded, some of the talent that they've gotten back, and maybe even considering the NBA draft too. If you're a fan, how should you be evaluating this front office and the job that they're doing? And if the fan base is on board for this rebuild and is looking to get more competitive and like the chips that they have on this team, looking to get more competitive, but also kind of gauge what they should feel about the front office and the moves that they've made, where should the fan base sit as of right now?
You guys are going to get me in trouble asking me about Gar Pax here. I mean, I think it's no secret that I'm not a huge fan of their decisions. Now, you have to give credit where credit is due. They have done a great job drafting. Wendell Carter at 7 and Markkanen also at 7. Fantastic picks. I think both those guys would go higher if we redrafted today. But aside from drafting, I think that their decisions have been pretty terrible, frankly. Like, they had such a great opportunity with all this cap space. They haven't used any of it effectively. They could have had like quite a few draft picks coming in. Instead, they have a deficit. You know, they keep on trading away these second round picks. I don't think they've been good at evaluating talent in the free agent market and picking guys to go after, like Jabari Parker. I mean, there were a lot, even if you just wanted to get the best player available, regardless of fit, like Julius Randle is way better and way cheaper. Montrezl Harrell also way better and way, way cheaper. So I don't understand like what they do with their pro scouting where they pick these guys. It seems like they just go after big names, honestly. Like Dwayne Wade, if you had watched him in the last couple of years, you knew exactly what you were getting with that guy. And to give him, what did they give him, like $50 million or whatever? That's just totally insane to me. I don't see how any competent NBA front office could do that. So those decisions are just really worrying to me. I hope that they have this tiny staff. They say it all the time. I wish that they would upgrade their staff to the point where they look like a normal NBA front office, because they're just working from such a huge competitive disadvantage by not having enough people in place to evaluate the league.
Yeah, Steph, I'm with you there. And we always hear Gar Foreman talk about how much he and the organization value cap flexibility. And they always brag about cap flexibility when they were, they signed Wayne Rondo to those weird, backwards deals when they said younger, more athletic, and then went and signed those guys. But they were short term, and they always brag about how they were one of the few smart teams not signing gross long term contracts in the summer of 2016. Well, fast forward 2 years, and it's not like they're in a much better position than all of the other teams in the league. I think even at this point, those summer of 2016 contracts have already kind of alleviated themselves as big problems on most rosters and most caps right now. Looking to 2019 free agency, as we talk about a team that struggles to make the right calls in that part of the game, I don't see this Bulls team courting and landing any of these big name free agents that Bulls fans want to talk about. Whether you're talking about Clay or Kawhi or Kemba or Jimmy or any of those guys, I just don't see it. So if you are of like mind and don't think it's realistic that the Bulls are going to land a big name free agent, do you think that there are any mid-level guys out there that could maybe add a piece that this Bulls team really needs? And if so, who might that be?
I haven't put a ton of time yet looking into the free agent class, and I agree with you that they're probably going to strike out on those big name guys. Chris Middleton is like maybe the most realistic guy, where he's probably not good enough to get the full max from the Bucks, but the Bulls might give it to him. And, you know, maybe the Bucks do just match that because they're not going to be able to find a guy to replace him in the free agent market either. So maybe they go deep into the tax for him, but there's a lot of good mid-tier players in this class too. I think I read something like 30 to 40% of the league is potentially going to be a free agent. So there's going to be a ton of cap space, but there's also going to be a ton of players where you can go out and find someone. A guy that I actually have been advocating for a lot on Twitter is Jeremy Lamb. I think that he's like a good two-way player where he's not like a superstar, but the Bulls can probably get him for less than starter money. They say that like $15 million annually is like generally what an average starter gets. I think that you could get Lamb for less than that, but that's the type of target that I would go for, is a guy who can play both ends of the floor, who will make a reasonable salary and who is young and can grow into like a pretty good value contract by the end of that deal, because you don't want to overpay for a guy like Middleton where you're only getting positive production out of that contract in the first couple years of the deal, and then you're paying him way too much at the end. That just doesn't fit with what this rebuild is going to be. You know, the Bulls should target like 3 or 4 years down the line where they're really going to hit that peak window of this team. So yeah, getting guys on their second contract, I think, is what makes the most sense.
Last question for me, just looking at the overarching this entire season. So once Portis gets back, barring no setbacks from Portis, Markkanen, or Dunn, you imagine we're probably going to get somewhere between 45 and 55 games with all of those guys fully healthy, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. What should be the expectation for Bulls fans going forward? Because I think something that Matt and I have brought up multiple times is like, once Markkanen's reinserted to that lineup, same thing with Portis and Dunn, it's going to take some time for these guys to get to find some chemistry and figure out how to play together. And that might take a little bit longer than maybe Bulls fans are anticipating. Like sticking Markkanen back there in day one, I'm hoping Bulls fans don't think all of a sudden he's going to drop poor on 30 or 35 and he's going to be exactly the player we left off with him last year. But what should be the overall expectations? And by the time we get to April and the evaluations, where would you like to see this Bulls team be at?
Well, I think you're right that it's going to take a little time. I mean, the threesome of Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen last year is pretty well reported that those guys didn't play very well together. They had a net rating of minus 20.5 points per 100 possessions, which is really terrible. So I think that, you know, they didn't really play that many minutes together, and they do kind of make sense on paper. So you shouldn't be totally down on the Bulls' core fitting. I think that Hoiberg is going to – he's shown that, like, he can – especially with Markkanen, he can put him in spots on the floor where he is a really effective offensive player. So, yeah, I think they'll definitely get a lot better. Like, these games without those core pieces have been, frankly, like, pretty tough to watch. And at the very least, they're going to be entertaining. Just seeing Markkanen and Carter work together, too. I mean, those guys are, like, such a perfect pairing. I'm really excited to see – what that is going to look like. But I've heard some people say that, like, they're scared the Bulls are going to get too good to get, like, a high draft pick. Like, they're going to end up in the 7 or 8 range in the lottery again. I'm not really that worried about that. I mean, I think that maybe they'll end as, like, the 5th or 6th worst team, but that's still giving you a really good shot in this upcoming draft.
Well, that seems like a good place to end this, Steph, because that is all kinds of positivity. The Bulls are going to be more watchable and more entertaining when they get some of these guys back. But don't worry, they'll still probably be a high-end lottery team. I mean, that's the best of both worlds right there. Stefan, we always appreciate you stopping by Locked On Bulls. If you're not subscribed to The Athletic Chicago, you absolutely should be to get Steph's great content along with his colleague Darnell Mayberry, another friend of the show. Follow Steph on Twitter at StephNo. Read his great Bulls columns, a lot of great basketball X's and O's stuff, and definitely check out that piece he wrote recently about the Bulls' recent free agency history. Steph, have a great week, man. Keep up the great work over The Athletic. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank our guest in Stephan Noh. Follow him on Twitter at Stephan Noh. All of his work over at The Athletic, great Bulls columns, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot of thoughts about the Milwaukee Bucks Bulls game tonight. So make sure, if you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, I don't know what you're doing, but you should stop everything you're doing right now and go subscribe to The Athletic for Darnell Mayberry and Stephan Noh's coverage of the Bulls all season long. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Stefan, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com